Hello and welcome back to the last MJA podcast for 2019. My name's Kate Swanell and I am your exhausted but satisfied host. In October of 2018, as part of a raft of alcohol harm reduction strategies, the Northern Territory Government introduced a floor price of $1.30 on a standard alcoholic drink. A team of researchers based at the Alice Springs Hospital's intensive care unit decided to collect data 6 months prior to and 6 months after the floor price was introduced. Lead author Dr. Paul Seckham, an intensive care consultant, is here today to tell us about the encouraging results on acute alcohol misuse presentations. Tell us a little bit, first of all, about Alice Springs ICU. What's the setup? What sort of beds? What sort of presentations are your norm?
I guess Alice Springs intensive care is arguably the most remote intensive care in the country. It's 1,500 kilometres from the next nearest tertiary facility. What rocks into the hospital that is critically ill, we need to be able to look after. We're a 10-bedded intensive care. Six of those beds are nominally ICU beds, four are nominally HTU beds. And we see between 600 and 700 critically ill patients a year, about two-thirds of whom are Indigenous or Aboriginal. And our mortality rate is extraordinarily low. We run it at about 2.7%.
Wow, brilliant.
Mortality, which for intensive cares is remarkably low.
Yes.
And it's a little hard to know what drives that. Whether it's the relatively young age of our patients. Our patients are on average about 10 or 15 years younger than ICU patients across the rest of the country. Whether it's the chronic disease burden, which tends to be less well managed in our bit of the world than most other places, so that we've got some room to optimise chronic disease as part of their acute presentation, or whether there's something else that we can't put our finger on. I would like to think that it's because the intensivists here are excellent, but I think
that's a fair part of it, mate.
Yeah, there are four full-time intensive care specialists servicing this area. Catchment area is 1.2 to 1.5 million square kilometres, extending out to the other side of the WA border. So we retrieve patients from Warburton and from Kirikara. It extends east right up to the Queensland border, Lake Nash, where we would retrieve patients from. But the clinic catchment area for Lake Nash extends into the Queensland, So we see some Queensland patients. It extends south down to at least Marla, South Australia. So all of the Pitland mostly come to Alice Springs. And every now and again, if the South Australian Retrieval Service is pumped, we'll take patients from Coober Pedy back to Alice Springs.
Good
and
grief.
northwards up to Elliot, which is the other side of Tennant Creek, a little over halfway to Darwin. So it's a huge catchment area. The census data would suggest that there are probably about 50,000 people in that catchment area, of whom about 35 to 40% identify as Indigenous.
Yeah. Do you get many tourists coming through?
Interesting you should say that. We've just finished looking at that data. So about 10% of our work is tourists, which is a mix of both interstate, intrastate, so people from the top end travelling through, and international tourists.
Well, at least you won't have them falling off the rock anymore.
No. We would get one of those about once a year.
So before the floor price came in, what were you seeing? You're saying that your patients tend to be a bit younger than the ones nationally. Is that down to alcohol, do you think? What sort of things were you seeing before the floor price?
So the alcohol story in the territory is an interesting and complex one. And I think to explore it more fully, we need to appreciate how alcohol fits into society in general. And we know it's the most commonly abused or misused legal drug, certainly worldwide. The Americans have looked at it, the English have looked at it, and indeed Nutt and colleagues in about 2010 did some really interesting epidemiological research looking at the harms of drugs, both to self and to others, and alcohol was by far the most harmful drug, both in terms of harm to self and harm to others. And from an Australian context, I guess we have a Australians have a very interesting relationship with alcohol.
Yes, we do.
And the Northern Territory in particular has a very intriguing relationship, to the point where, you know, it wasn't so long ago the Chief Minister spoke at a a liquor conference and said, you know, we're Territorians, alcohol is part of our life. And it was only a year or two before that he was busy telling the long grasses in Darwin to stop drinking and to get out of town. So it's a really interesting relationship.
Yep.
And to understand it a bit further, I think we need to understand how we measure alcohol consumption, which is, you know, trying to get the numbers, this is really difficult, but the World Health Organization and within Australia, we measure alcohol consumption as consumption of pure alcohol in litres of pure alcohol consumed per person over the age of 15 per year. And, you know, I think you see over time the consumption of alcohol in Australia has been slowly falling, so that on average now Australians are drinking slightly less than 10 litres of pure alcohol per person over the age of 15 per year. But in the Territory, we have quite regularly consumed alcohol somewhere between 1.3 and 2 times that rate.
Yes.
And that reflects in alcohol-related hospitalisations and alcohol-related mortality. And in fact, the MJA published something by Scoven colleagues in about 2010 or 12, which showed that the alcohol-related mortality was about 3.5-fold in the Northern Territory, and alcohol-related hospitalizations were about 1.2 to 1.5-fold the rest of the country. So Territorians consume alcohol at high rates, and we see health-related problems associated with that. In my head, it's a bit hard to know what the alcohol consumption is actually like. So we know that Territorians probably drink about 12 litres pure alcohol per person over 15. We know within Central Australia it's slightly higher than that. It's between 13 and 14 litres, which I find hard to conceptualise. So if we remember that 10 grams of alcohol is a standard drink, which is about 12.5 mils of pure alcohol, means within Central Australia, on average, for every person over the age of 15, we're consuming about 30 cartons of full-strength beer and half a dozen bottles of red wine.
Per person per year.
That's on average. And we know also that there's marked variation in what people are drinking. So a significant proportion of Aboriginal people are in fact abstainers.
Yes.
We know there are more abstainers in the Indigenous population than in the non-Indigenous population. And probably about 2/3 of the population drink at a level that is associated with a low risk of harm. So that means there's a very small group of people that are drinking a lot of alcohol. Having sort of put that all into context, we started to wonder a few years ago what that was resulting, how that was showing up in ICU numbers. You know, most jurisdictions collect data on ED presentations or hospital separations, look at alcohol misuse. That's pretty granular data. It doesn't really look at the morbidity that's associated with alcohol misuse. So we looked at this over a seven-year period, 2009 to 2015, and found, using a definition of alcohol misuse that was maybe a little generous, but used the theme that you were drinking at a level that was likely to result in a health problem, that about 30% of admissions to this intensive care were associated with alcohol misuse in some way, shape or form. And we published that data start of 2018.
Big numbers, right?
Huge numbers.
Yeah.
And when you think about the morbidity associated with that, so that group of patients were more likely to require mechanical ventilation. The reasons for that are not quite clear. That might be related to the diagnostic category that was putting them into ICU. So it tended to be a lot of trauma, pancreatitis, gastrointestinal bleeding. Often those sort of diagnostic codes, I'm pancreatitis, often those sort of diagnostic codes when you are that ill to get into ICU are associated with mechanical ventilation anyway. But mechanical ventilation is associated with not insignificant morbidity in itself, not to mention insignificant cost to the taxpayer. That got us thinking a little bit more about how we were thinking about alcohol misuse, because we just classified it as generally alcohol misuse when clearly there are two subpopulations within that as well: those who are acutely misusing alcohol and those who are chronically misusing alcohol, and the types of problems associated with those two are quite different. The acute misuse, pancreatitis, alcohol withdrawal seizures, trauma. The chronic misuse, more likely to be, you know, alcohol-induced cardiomyopathy, malnutrition, often associated with chronic pancreatitis, an acquired brain injury, and obviously chronic liver disease and all the sequelae that come along with chronic liver disease. So we decided to split our definitions into an acute and chronic component. And our intention was to collect more prospective data about this. What we didn't know when we planned this study was that the Northern Territory government was about to introduce some more changes to alcohol policy, aiming at harm minimisation. And one of those key plank of that policy was introduction of this floor price for alcohol.
Which the no standard drink can cost less than $1.30.
Exactly. Yep. Exactly. So this was a recommendation that came out of the Riley report about 2015 and or 16. And the recommendation was actually a floor price that was slightly higher than that. I think they suggested about $1.50, but $1.30 is where we have settled.
I'm chatting with Dr. Paul Seckham from Alice Springs Hospital. Paul's co-authored research letter is available at mja.com.au, where it is open access. As I said earlier, this is our last podcast for the year. We'll be back on deck on the 13th of January 2020, when we'll be talking to Chris Vitullo about knee arthroscopies. Back to our chat. Were you a fan of that idea before it came in?
Yes. Yeah, I think that the evidence in the international literature is that if you're interested in a harm minimisation approach, then an alcohol floor price makes a difference.
Yes.
And almost overnight, anecdotally, we noticed a difference.
Okay.
Certainly walking around town, there was an immediate reduction in the plastic wine bottles that were sold up until that time. So there were two wineries, and I won't mention them by name, who would send wines to Alice Springs, buy 750 mils of white wine that was in a plastic bottle for about $5 a bottle.
Wow.
Which is clearly, in some places, cheaper than you can buy bottled water for.
Of course.
And it would be not uncommon when you're walking around town, particularly around the river, to see a dozen plastic bottles scattered in an area. And almost overnight, that disappeared, which got us wondering, given that we're already collecting this data and we'd already split our definitions into acute and chronic, whether we were seeing a difference in the critical care admissions as well. So as soon as we hit that sort of 6-month mark after the introduction of the floor price, we pulled the data and looked at it. And this is the data that's been about to be published in our MJA letter, and which we're very excited about because it showed a 54% reduction in critical care admissions associated with acute alcohol misuse in the 6 months pre and post. Now, clearly there are problems. You know, there's seasonal variation. It's only six months. It's all very, very short. It's a snapshot. But I think what makes the data stronger is that there was not the same reduction in admissions associated with chronic misuse, which is exactly what you would expect from a sudden reduction in the immediate availability of alcohol. The hope would be that we will slowly see a reduction in the emissions associated with chronic misuse, but that's going to take much longer.
Do you have plans to extend the research out beyond?
We are still collecting data. Our initial intention was to collect at least 12 months of data about alcohol misuse anyway. Our hope is to expand that to the whole territory and include Darwin in this as well. And that data collection is ongoing. We hope to be able to pull that data down in the next month or two and report on that early in 2020.
So a positive result for the policy so far?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. The Northern Territory government independently collects data on ED presentations, and at about the same time, we've seen a dramatic reduction in ED presentations, particularly in that triage categories of 3, 4 and 5 that seem to be associated with alcohol misuse as well. So it seems to have had an almost immediate impact and a significant impact. So it's a great outcome.
Have you seen any age or gender differences?
No, not. I guess usually the data that we collected early on would suggest that those who were misusing alcohol tended to be younger anyway, about four or five years. So there is that age difference already. There were a concerning proportion of those patients who were female, and clearly, you know, when you're in that sort of average age of 40 to 45 and you're female, you are still in childbearing years, so you are misusing alcohol through those FASD, years. That is clearly concerning, and we know the impact the FASD has on kids, and that is a tsunami of problems we're probably going to be encountering in the next 10 or 15 years.
So if you could wave your magic wand, Paul, what would you do on top of the floor price policy? As an intensive care consultant, what would you like to see happen now?
So this is stepping out of intensive care. We need to see more primary and public health work in this area. You know, what we do in intensive care a lot of times is put a band-aid on the problem, get people over their critical illness through the acute phase of their disease, but then we send them back out into the same environment that was associated with leading to misuse in the first instance. So overcrowding, poverty, disenfranchisement, the list goes on and on. And In some ways, this is the evil of acute care medicine. We load everything up at that front end. We get people through their acute illness only to send them
back to back the same to this,
exactly the same environment that in many ways has led people to the problem in the first place.
Again, it's about government policies and it's about money, but is it just about throwing money at it? There has to be more than that.
Well, I think we throw money at acute care medicine and we prop hospitals up without going back and redirecting some of our attention to the underlying issues. So within Central Australia, we see an unbelievable burden of skin and soft tissue injury, for example. And I think we've just had something published recently. And, you know, skin and soft tissue injuries, skin and soft tissue infection is clearly linked to socioeconomic status. And yet we're not dressing basics like scabies, like, for example, having shower blocks at school so that kids, when they come to school, can have a shower and wash their faces and clean their skin. You know, simple, relatively simple, what would seem on the face of it to be relatively cheap interventions like that not making their way out to that sphere. We saw the difference in some top-end communities of putting a swimming pool in. You know, we saw ear disease and skin disease drop away remarkably.
Interesting.
You know, showers at school, maybe that's maybe we need to be thinking outside the square slightly to be thinking of those sorts of things that will reduce the burden of disease.
Would you like to see the floor price lifted?
I think it's early days. I think we've seen a reduction. I think there has been lots of political comment both for and against the floor price. I think it's slightly early days to know whether it should go up or not, and we should probably wait a little more data.
Fair enough.
My gut feeling is that it should probably go up a little bit. But again, as with all of these interventions, we should put in place the intervention, we should try and reduce confounders, then we should measure the outcome and then make a rational decision on what we should be doing going forward, based on what the data is telling us.
Thanks, Paul.
Thanks for your time, Kate.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.